And welcome back to our special edition of Topical Currents at Your Service with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mietes of Canine Advisors. And this bonus segment will be posted on our website, WLRN.org, because we still have calls and we still have emails. But before we get to them, Adele, what were you saying when we were on the break?
For the gentleman getting the golden retriever puppy worrying about the spaying.
Javier.
Yeah, I'd like to just let him know I've been training professionally for over 22 years. I've trained an enormous amount of golden retrievers, being that I've done a lot of work with the Golden Retriever Rescue of Naples. I own a golden retriever myself, and I can say wholeheartedly, I have never heard of any situation, golden retriever or any other breed, where the dog gets cancer because the dog got sterilized.
Okay.
Either a female getting spayed or a male getting neutered. I've never heard of that. There's a number of documented cases of animals that may have gotten cancer because they have not gotten sterilized, but not ever having gotten cancer due to having gotten sterilized or spayed or neutered.
Okay. And did you want to add something, Dr. Kupke, or?
Well, I was focused on females, but males too. Early sterilization has been proved again and again to be the very best thing for the long-term health of a pet. Ultimately, for folks that say it's not natural, if you really want to split hairs, the keeping of a pet is not natural. We made that decision by taking a dog and making them a house pet. I want my dog to live as long as possible, and I can't tell you how many times I've seen intact female dogs with breast cancer, and it all could have been avoided if only they'd been spayed early.
And that's what I've heard about cats, too. I got my kitty. I was so reluctant not to get her spayed, but I was just nervous, and she got breast cancer.
Yeah.
And they said it was because she was spayed when she was a little, not too old, but it was older.
Yeah.
So,
the consensus is 4 months of age.
Not to mention for overpopulation reasons and for everything else to get animals spayed and neutered. Okay, so we have lots of calls and emails, and Alicia has been waiting the longest here. Alicia in Fort Lauderdale. Alicia, hi.
Hi. I have two questions. My dog is 6 years old, and he pulls on the leash. He's been pulling ever since he was a baby. So I was wondering what's the easiest way to get him to stop doing that. And the second question is, he's always been comfortable around big dogs, and recently, for some reason, he's been barking at some of them while we've been on walks. And I was wondering why. I ought to stop that.
What kind of dog is it?
A Shih Tzu.
Oh, okay. Adele?
Okay, well, the pulling on the leash part, it's something that we generally find something that motivates the dog. Oftentimes we'll use treats. In other cases, we might just use praise, especially if the dog has a good bond with you. One of the things that we'll do is when he decides to go in one direction, we shift directions to an opposite direction and get him to follow through, measure it in either steps or literally seconds that you can walk with him with a loose leash clip hanging. And the second he starts pulling away, then we also move away in an opposite direction. It's also a way of holding the leash. This is a lot easier when I can actually show it to you, but there's a way of holding the leash to be able to release some of that slack. So when you turn around, he all of a sudden needs to focus back on you and turn on his own. And generally he's getting some sort of reward, a praise, or a treat right after. As far as the barking with the other dogs, if he's always gone along with the bigger dogs and he's barking at some of the bigger dogs, he probably is barking more because he was excited and he wants to go play. He probably has gotten many opportunities where in the past he has barked, and maybe it's a neighbor's large dog or a large dog that he's already played with before, and then you just kind of walk him over and therefore he gets rewarded for his barking. So one of the things that you'll want to do is when he barks, you turn him around and have him face in an opposite direction. When he stops the barking, if that's a dog you want him to go play with, then you can have him go play with the dog, have him hang out, meet the dog. He needs to know that not every dog that passes by is he going to get to meet and play with.
Yeah.
Even if he's met and played with that dog before. He needs to know that. And the only way he's going to know it is if you control yourself and make sure that you don't allow him to go and play with the dog, even if for no other reason, basically to show him that he is not going to play all the time. He's only going to play when he's quiet and you decide that he's going to play.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
All right, Alicia, thank you very much for calling. And we're going to go to Catherine in Homestead. Catherine, you're with us on Topical Currents.
Yes, thank you. Yes, one of my dogs has intermittent potty issues. They have access to the outdoors 24 hours a day. I have doggy doors, so they go out in and out as they please. But she goes through phases where she, you know, piddles in the house, but yet she goes outdoors. She never does it when I'm around, so which to me seems more behavioral than medical. And she, another thing she'll do, she and the dogs sleep with me at night. There's no other people in the house, but if I leave my bedroom door open, she'll go in and get on my bed and pee on the bed. So I just keep that door closed when I'm not home. But then she'll go through phases where she's going outside and no problems at all. And then she'll go through a phase where, she's doing it again.
Okay.
This is very classical. Your dog needs a little bit more structure and a little bit more leadership from you, and all that behavior will stop. They have access to going out all the time, so clearly it's not because they have to go. And like you said, she only do it when you're not around. Some real basic structure, like with the feeding, for example, where you would get her used to, you put the food down. She really wants to go eat the food because you would have put her on an eating schedule before. And now when she really wants to go get the food, we would work with her on doing something like a basic look command where she would look at you when you ask her to look at you. And she needs to do that before and hold that look for a few seconds before you give her the okay to go eat. That's a real basic structure exercise you can do on a daily basis a couple times a day when you feed her. And then, real basic things like if you're up on your bed and your dog is used to going up on your bed on her own, while I'm not one of these really hardline trainers that'll say your dog can never sleep with you on the bed, I'm going to tell you a few basic things. You want to make sure that the dog knows that the dog cannot go up on the bed unless you call the dog up on the bed. They cannot go up on their own. Start setting a few basic parameters. Going through doors, for example, when you're going to take them out for a walk, is another way of being able to provide some structure where you teach the dog a basic wait command, open that door, make sure the dog doesn't go out, and then the dog would only come out when they're called out by name.
And would I have to, I have a second dog, it's not problematic, but would I have to apply those same things to this other dog?
Much suggested to apply it to the other dog to make your life easy. Because it will take you a lot longer to get the first dog to know what to do if the other dog can just do whatever they want.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Catherine, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have lots of emails. Let me just try and get this in. Kin Kivit. We recently added a third Labrador, Pepper, to our family due to a life-limiting illness to our 9-year-old yellow lab, Biscuit, which has caused her to go blind. We are surprised to find the puppy attempting to become the alpha dog and the younger middle adult dog, Molly, allowing this behavior. Biscuit, the current alpha dog, is mostly unaware of this due to her blindness. We encourage Molly to be more proactive, but she often allows the puppy to take toys away, go out of the door ahead of the other two, etc. Can you comment?
Yes, very typical. That is not atypical at all. That's very typical that the puppy who comes in with all sorts of excitement and very little few rules, if you will, the puppy is going to be more immature. They're going to be testing limits. It's going to be really important that you as the human and hopefully the pack leader starts establishing some pack order in that group. Particularly important for that puppy to be raised with a little bit more order, a little bit more structure, especially for the older dog. You don't want the older dog to be more and more uncomfortable, and the middle dog as well would start getting more uncomfortable if the puppy is allowed to get more and more dominant as the puppy gets a little older and a little bigger. So a few basic pack order exercises I mentioned before with the kitties, it works also with the dogs, to use some treats as well as attention to be able to give it to one and not the other. In this case, puppy might be on a leash, for example, and you're stepping on the leash and you call some of the other dogs over, have them get the treat in front of the puppy. Puppy needs to stay there until you call the puppy over. The same thing with attention. You might pay attention to one dog and not the other on purpose until you call the other dog, perhaps the puppy last, and then give him attention.
Okay.
And I just wanted to add, sorry to sound like a broken record, but make sure the new puppy is spayed or neutered, because there's nothing worse than introducing an intact dog into an existing household. That dog's going to, by its own nature, vie for dominance. And
very
until that
point.
Powder puppy's spayed or neutered, you're stuck in this.
Very good point.
Okay, and we're going to go to Michelle in Plantation. She has a cat with hyperthyroidism. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Hi, everyone. I just had a question. I have a 14-year-old cat, and he was recently diagnosed with hyperthyroidism. So for the past 6 months, he's been on methimazole, 5 milligrams,
mm-hmm.
which he gets twice a day,
okay.
but a total of 5 milligrams. I'm unsure about the long-term side effects of this treatment, and I'm wondering if you would recommend me continuing to do this, or I'm also considering the radioiodine therapy to extend his life as long as possible.
Okay. Well, by far the gold standard is the radioiodide. I think all vets would agree with that. It is a bit of an upfront cost,
mm-hmm.
but if you compare that to the long-term costs of the oral medication plus the rechecks, and whilst there are some side effects of methimazole, potentially the benefits certainly outweigh all risks. You cannot leave a hyperthyroid cat unmedicated. There's pills. You can get the medication formulated in a liquid, even in a transdermal gel. So all of those are options. And the radiation iodide treatment is fantastic, because you basically take the problem off the table. There are a number of specialty places in the Miami Lauderdale area that provide the service, and my understanding is clients that have gone have been very happy with them.
I did it to one of my cats.
Yeah.
I think it was called Veterinarian Specialists, and it's in Broward.
Oh, okay. Cooper City, maybe?
Cooper City.
Yeah, there's a place in Cooper City. There's also a traveling vet called Eric Mears, who I believe does his work in Miami Veterinary Specialists on 87th and Sunset.
Oh, okay.
Miami.
I'm sorry, doctor. Can you tell me, it was the traveling veterinarian?
His name is Dr. Eric Mears. Nice guy. And he goes to different facilities. And he's down here in Miami, it's Miami Veterinary Specialists who are on Sunset and Galloway.
Okay.
So if you give them a call, they can tell you when Dr. Mears is next in town. But I've been very happy with how he's treated my patients. He's definitely a cat lover, a very, very nice person, good bedside manner. You like him.
If I do want to extend his life as long as possible, that is what you would recommend over continuing the medication?
Well, all things being equal, you know, the problem is, of course, there's other things that can affect kitties down the road, and there's no guarantee either way. But I would say that if I had a hyperthyroid cat, I'd seriously look at the I-131. It's a good option for them.
Okay, and his age wouldn't be a factor. 14, he's still a good candidate.
I've had cats on my books 22 years old, you know.
Okay.
Okay, Michelle, thanks so
much. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we're going to go to Susan in Miami. Susan, hi, you're on Topical Currents.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My cat is 12 years old, and it seems like when we go on vacation, she'll pee on our dining room table. And then another instance, I was walking in the house, and she wasn't by herself because my son was home. And I walked in, and I started, just talking loud to her. And she turned around and jumped up on a stool by the kitchen and just peed. And I was wondering, if a behavioral thing, or But I know when we leave her alone is when she pees on the dining room table, you know, for a vacation.
Okay, do either of you...
It certainly sounds like it's a behavioral thing. Cats generally like to be up higher, but when they go up higher and then try to mark in an area up higher, it generally does show some sort of behavior issue where the cat perhaps feels that they have to be more dominant at a certain time. You made a good note there of you having a louder voice and perhaps that triggering the cat to do that. I have known of a couple of situations where the people in the household argue with each other and then the cat goes and does a behavior like that where they go up on a chair or on a bed up a little bit higher and then pee. So
that's the only time that ever happened was then. But then she'll go into the bathroom and pee in the shower or she's done that when we were, you know, out of town for a long period of time.
The being out of town for long periods of time, sometimes even for a short period of time as well, it provides a change already in the dog's daily, in the cat's daily routine. One of the things that is generally recommended is to find yourself a local pet sitter that knows cats and that can maintain a similar schedule to one that you may have. They may not be able to stay there, although some can actually stay in your household. But you want to make sure at least that you have somebody going in there and giving some sort of attention to the kitty, perhaps with one of those little toys on a fishing line type of thing, to get the cat motivated and stimulated to not have them go out of their routine and then perhaps start marking in places they normally wouldn't.
Okay. And okay, Susan, Dr. Kupke?
Just had one observation. I see this from time to time. You mentioned you're going on vacation, you leave your kitties in the house. Do you have some kind of automatic feeder or something?
No. I have two friends that come over and they take turns coming in, feeding her and giving her attention.
Right.
So she still does this right on the dining room table.
See, the other thing, too, that I should have mentioned earlier, whenever you're looking at these marking issues, very important to rule out medical causes, too. I mean, we've all been, today we've been jumping onto the behavioral explanations, but sometimes it's both. A cat or dog might have an underlying urinary tract issue that they barely deal with, and then the additional change of leaving home or basically any change in their household, and they just can't control it anymore. And I'm amazed how many pets have chronic urinary tract disease. My two dachshunds, case in point, and they get everything, but they particularly periodically get urinary tract infections. And it's something you have to stay on top of.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Susan. Well, good
Thank
luck.
You.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that's about all we have time for on today's Topical Currents. This has been our bonus segment, our At Your Service Vet Edition with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic. That's sablechaseanimalclinic.com, SABAL, 305-595-1450. 1450. And Adele Mietes of Canine Advisors. That's K9advisors.com. And I'm Bonnie Berman for Joseph Cooper. Thank you very much, Richard Ives, for staying on. Thank you, Paul Leary, for staying on. And this will be posted on our website, WLRN.org.